As always, even though that music is from Two Guys Gaming, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you're meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series I am reading and reacting to The Poppy War, the book by R.F. Kuang. I actually went to see how to pronounce her last name because I wasn't 100% sure. Thankfully, she put a helpful pronunciation guide right on her webpage, so she must get that question a lot. As you know, I finished up Jurassic Park, well, the book. I still have to do the movie versus episode. I haven't figured out how to work it into my schedule just yet, but I will figure that out and get that done, hopefully before I move on to the next Dragonlance book, but who knows, it might come in August instead of July. Also, I reworked the schedule so that I should be able to do 3 episodes a week of this and get this done before the next Dragonlance book comes out, but as always, we'll play it by ear, and when I get there, and I'll figure it out if need be. How did I come upon this book? I saw it in, we have a local bookstore here, and I saw it in the local bookstore. I picked it up, I looked at it, I walked around the bookstore a little bit more, I let it kind of marinate in my head. I went back, I looked at it again, I did a little bit of research on the author, and then I finally just said, you know what, this would probably make a good book for Noob's Book Club. And so far I have to say that it's true. There's going to be a lot happening in this book and this series from what I can gather, so I think it's going to be rich for the club, and who knows, maybe it'll even finally get the name out there a little bit more, because I'm trying to reach a wider audience. If I don't, I don't, but it would be great to just have some like-minded people to talk to about books and gaming and all that sort of thing. That's the whole reason that I've had the website. And next year's our 10-year anniversary, and I'm still just sort of on the outskirts of the internet, kind of talking to myself. But not that that's bad. It's just that, you know, you think, you hope, you dream, and then reality sometimes does not match up with those. Anyway, as I do on Noob's Book Club, I will read a summary of the 2 chapters. I'm going to do 2 chapters each episode. Hopefully that'll cut down on the amount of time that it takes for turnover, and I'll be able to do the 3 episodes that I'm talking about a week and get it done before the next Dragonlance book. And then I will give my thoughts on the chapters. Right now, it's just kind of like a free-flowing stream of consciousness. Maybe as we get into the book, I might have more varied, more distinct sections as I did with Jurassic Park. The summary this time comes from supersummary.com. I found that page when I did a search for Cliff's Notes or Spark Notes or whatever for the book. I didn't get a subscription to get the whole book or whatever, but the summary comes from supersummary.com. If you go there, you'll need to get a subscription, is basically what I'm saying. Part 1, Chapter 1, Summary. Comes with a content warning. This book contains self-harm, recreational drug use and drug addiction, racism, classism, colorism, physical abuse, mental abuse, explicit wartime violence, explicit sexual violence, sexual assault, human experimentation, suicide, and genocide. 16-year-old Fang Runin, known as Rin, enters an examination room to take the Keiju, an academy entrance exam. Across the Nakara Empire, more than 23,000 students simultaneously take the Keiju, hoping to score into 3,000 academy spots. These spots are largely given to children of rich families who can afford tutoring. Only a few are given to students from Tikini, Rin's small town in the southern Rooster province. The story flashes back to 2 years ago. Rin's foster parents summon a matchmaker who finds Rin a wealthy merchant, twice divorced and 3 times her age. The Fangs are making this match for strategic gain. They were forced to adopt Rin after the Second Poppy War, when Empress Su Daji mandated the adoption of war orphans. They made Rin a shop girl and opium runner, but were clear that she was burdensome. After the meeting, Rin steals an opium packet and goes to tutor Ferrick's house. She pleads with Ferrick to tutor her for the Keiju. Ferrick hesitates until Rin shows him the opium. Like many in Tikini, Ferrick has a drug addiction. He agrees to tutor Rin free of charge. Rin's sole chance at escaping marriage is to test in the tuition-free military academy in Sinigard. Auntie Fang is frustrated, but Rin threatens to report her opium business to authorities if Auntie Fang forbids her from studying. Rin sets a rigorous study schedule for herself. She finds Nikan's long history of war entertaining. Most recently, there were two poppy wars between Nikan and a nearby island nation, the Federation of Mugen. During the Second War, three warriors, known as the Trifecta, seized control of Nikan. The only known survivor of the Trifecta is the Viperess, Empress Su Daji, who has shakily ruled over 12 provinces and 12 warlords ever since. To cram as much as possible, Rin pours hot wax onto her arms to keep herself awake. A week after the test, results are posted. Rin achieved the highest score in Rooster Province and is admitted to Syngard. Part 1, Chapter 2 Summary. No one in Tikini is pleased that a shop girl earned the top score on the Keiju. The only person sorry to see Rin go is her foster brother, Kasigi. On her three-week journey north with Feyrik, Rin realizes how little of the world she knows. In Syngard, Rin is overwhelmed. Rin finds that the academy, while insulated from the chaos of the city, is ruthless in its treatment of Southerners. A handsome classmate, Yaneja, mocks Rin's awe at a fancy building that turns out to be the outhouse. Rin bids Feyrik a tearful farewell. He tells Rin the people at the academy will try to break her and ostracize her, but she deserves her place. He warns her, "Don't ever come back to the south. You're better than that." Returning to the registration line, Rin overhears Neja making fun of Feyrik. Rin punches Neja in the face. He rushes at her, but an academy apprentice stops the fight. And now for my discussion of the characters. Rin. I couldn't help but think Harry Potter as I read her story. Orphan taken in by an unloving family that uses education as a way to go out and better herself. I know that Harry Potter isn't the only such story, but such is the power of modern zeitgeist. I don't mean any of that as a negative. Writers borrow and pay homage all the time. I just want to make it clear that I'm not accusing the author of anything. In fact, the parallels made the story feel more familiar and therefore more easy to read. Also, you know that Rin will rise above her status, parenthetically, unless she pulled a rope-a-dope on Rin being a main character, and parenthetical, so I needn't worry about that particular fate. As far as her character, so far she's likable. She has a moral code that she adheres to. Some might argue that it violates actual morals because she steals from and abets heroin dealers. Remember this in a minute when I talk about stacking the deck and then judging people for it. Yeah, that applies here. As you probably guessed, I also relate to her because she uses education and learning to improve her status. As someone who champions such a path on a regular basis, I love to see it mirrored in pop culture. The more that we can counteract the willful ignorance out there, the better, as far as I'm concerned. I think I said Fang earlier when I was talking about the family, but it's probably Fong. I'm not sure 100%. So I'll just go with Fong and hope that's true to kind of mirror Kwong. But anyway, opium dealers with a trade shop as cover. This is the Fongs, by the way, her adopted family. They probably think they're doing right by Rin when they set her up for marriage. Then, they surely think that she's being ungrateful and short-sighted by not accepting their generous offer. I don't wish ill on them. They suffer on the same system of exploitation and subjugation that I will talk about briefly. Tutor Feyrik. Not only incredibly proud of and full of belief in Rin, he also cautions her strongly not to get her hopes up too much. He reminds me very much of myself as a teacher. Then, when she aces the test, he supports her all the way to the academy. I doubt we will, but I hope we see more of him. We also meet Rin's brother. He pleads for her not to leave. She assures him that as a boy, he should be fine. Then we meet the requisite school bully and another potential mentor for Rin in the apprentice who breaks up the fight she starts. Just some general thoughts while reading. It shocked me how desperate Rin was about the exam and how much she sacrificed. That, of course, led me to think of what kind of society produces such desperation and a willingness to sacrifice so much. And I arrive where I always do. It doesn't have to be this way. Before I elaborate, allow me an aside. I know this is what they mean when they call me privileged. I grew up poor, but I never felt like I needed to lose sleep or mutilate myself in order to pass a test, because it determined my future. A future of either being married to someone I don't love and possibly want to kill, or enjoying a life of my choosing. I mean, she fails that test, and she considers murdering her future husband. That's grim. Me, I failed numerous times. I continue to fail, on a daily basis. Failure is an integral part of my philosophy. Without the ability to fail and learn from it, I have no idea where I'd be right now. And so, I appreciate my ability to fail and to try to teach others that philosophy as well. I now see that others maybe don't have this luxury to fail as regularly as I have, but I can still give them a safe place to develop those skills and fail so that they won't later on when the stakes are higher. Trust me, this is all going somewhere. I decided to make this series more stream of consciousness to start, so my usual propensity for tangents may be supercharged. As always, I promise to get you there eventually. Where did I leave off? Oh, it doesn't have to be this way. Much of human history, we fought one another. When those fights became less necessary, we invented competitions to act as proxy. Soccer, football, etc. Because a certain segment of the population believes that we get stronger only through competition. Cutthroat, winner-take-all, competition. Hey, that's fine for your silly sports leagues, I guess. I mean, one team gets to call their season a success, and the rest are all losers? That seems unnecessarily harsh, especially in the NFL. Those guys put their brains and bodies in danger for 16 to 20 weeks a year, and 97% of the league comes away with nothing? Hell, at least in college sports, they figured out how to reward more teams. Making March Madness is a big deal. And now with the expanded playoffs in football, that's 12 teams a year that will make it into the CFP. Now take that thinking and extend it to the general human experience. Instead of hundreds or thousands of losers, you now have billions. They don't lose only a ring and some silly trophy. And they don't have a multi-million-dollar contract to soften the blow. And oftentimes, they don't even get to say, quote-unquote, there's always next year. They simply have to live with their failure and wonder what might have been. What happens when you lose a life? Nothing good. And therein lies the problem. I purposely use the words lose and loser instead of failure up until the end there. See, the two words aren't synonymous, but we too often treat them as if they are. We set the stakes impossibly high, rig it so that almost everyone loses, and then judge them because they failed. They lost. It's completely fucked. And it doesn't have to be that way. Well, Sean, what do you propose? Hey, start by changing any one of those things. Why are the stakes so high? Why are only a select few even able to compete for them? Who does it hurt if they have more opportunities? I think we all know the answers to those questions. I also do have a proposal. Hey, I came prepared. Let's not allow them to equate our self-worth and our net worth. We are more than we produce for and consume from them. If someone wants to smoke their entire life and start a commune, how does it affect you one bit? Seriously, just live and let live. I had a student in New Hampshire that continually tried to figure me out politically. Initially, they tried Democrat because they live in that dichotomy. Then, eventually, they went Libertarian. I suppose there's some truth to that, but I don't want to be associated with those assholes. If we must put a name on it, I've always gone with long-haired, hippie-freak communist. I won't get into the whole discussion about the commie thing. If you know, you know. If not, and you want to actually discuss it, get in touch. Otherwise, let's move on. Plenty more to discuss. Where do we go from here? Well, obviously, Rin now needs to find her place at the Academy. Aside from the fact that she's a main character, I don't fear for her immediate survival. Sure, the kid threatened to kill her, but A, she appears to have at least one set of eyes looking out for her, and 2, the kid is a noble. He doesn't want to get his hands dirty. Sure, he might hire someone to carry out his abuse, but she will survive. She lived under the constant terror of the Fongs. She may end up psychologically or emotionally scarred, but she will survive. That again leads me to a thought. Why must she have to survive the constant abuse simply to realize her potential as a human being? It's just barbaric. We've shown that people who are nurtured and supported can become just as successful as those who are abused and punished. Plus, they don't end up with the debilitating mental disorders generally. I mean, we can all break in different ways. Why accelerate the process? I also want to learn more about the story of the Empire. It talks about the history mimics China's own. Admittedly, I don't know much about that. It will give me something to research while reading. Not that I need any more to keep me busy. I just love to learn. Also, the book promises fantasy elements. Gods that work in the lives of humans. Quote-unquote powers akin to magic. When do these things manifest? And in what capacity? I'm excited to find out. I don't care so much about the war right now, but I suppose that it's standard in fantasy and science fiction series. I just hope they treat it more like Star Trek and less like Star Wars. But based on what I've already read, I think that it will be brutal, bloody, and messy. You don't get to harmonious prime directive from emperor-run societies without breaking a lot of eggs in the process. But hey, maybe it will feel like the Dragonlance books. Bleak, hopeless, and grim, but ultimately with a triumph and a happy ending. I hold out hope for such. And now for a note about the bear. Yes, That the Bear, the TV show that everybody's talking about. An aside, but tangentially related. Like many of you, I'm sure, my wife and I watched The Bear. We just finished season 3 in about 2 days. Well, one of the themes of the show mirrors the themes in this book. Carmi's family, finally, needs to come to terms with the generational trauma. They're one of those stereotypical, loud and abrasive Italian families. Moms are drunk, and she terrorized them with emotional and psychological warfare that left them scarred and believing that love is conditional and based in pain. Carmi further experienced this in one of his jobs. The head chef, an abusive asshole, grinds whatever was left of his soul into dust and leaves him dead inside. He now tries to reconcile all of this and so far fails miserably. As someone who navigated this very path, I can say it's a long and arduous journey. And just when you think you're out, nope, you've got more work to do. While our intrepid hero, finally came to face-to-face with this asshole boss tormentor. And to his credit, he said, fuck you. Of course, the asshole boss acted like he did Carmi a favor with the abuse. It made you. And for that, you're welcome. And again, therein lies part of the problem. You don't need to break a person down in order to build them back up. What fucking sense does that make? Wouldn't you want to build with what you already have? Save yourself time and energy? I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is maybe we don't have to be dicks to each other all the time. And we accomplish no less than we already have. Think about it. Guys born on third, acting like they hit a triple, and then getting pissed because you don't bring them home, in spite of the fact that they change the rules in the meantime. Oh, and they steal home, robbing you of the chance for glory anyway. A tortured metaphor, but I think I got the point across. Final closing, overall impressions. Liam saw me reading the book on the beach. He said, that's supposed to be good. I replied, quote, so far it's good, end quote. I'm only 8 pages in, but I like it, end quote. Additionally, I read the following passage to them while on the beach. Batikini Township in Rooster Province was a village of farmers and peasants. Tikini's families needed hands to work the fields more than they did university-educated brats. Tikini only ever used the one classroom. Our town, again, went through a recent difficulty with the budget. They threatened to close the library and lay off massive amounts of educational staff. You don't need to know the local politics of Shittown, Massachusetts, but the main problem is that the only way they seem to know how to raise revenue is through property tax. It's a shit thing to do your residence every few years. Anyway, back to the point. After reading that, I just shrugged and said, what's this town's excuse? We're not even a farm town. We don't have that to fall back on. So again, I say, the more it seems we differ, the more we actually have in common. So yeah, I think this book will be a fun one for me. That opinion changed none over the rest of the first 2 chapters. I enjoyed reading them and look forward to what the rest of the book and ultimately the series brings. Admittedly, it's different from the books that I usually read. Unless you count the somewhat related lore of elves, I don't usually read much Asian-centered fiction. I watch movies and TV shows of all sorts, from the traditional kung fu to silly romantic comedies. And admittedly, the latter focuses more on the duality of also being American. For whatever reason, in spite of my attempts to be worldly, that remains a weak spot in my pop culture knowledge. I'm glad that I changed that with this book. I'm excited to go on this journey. I hope you all join me. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us if you haven't already at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles. I just did a couple articles on DC and the Spawniverse. I haven't done Marvel Comics yet, but I hope to get that one up soon. There's not really much else to talk about. I finished up the Fallout series, so you can read that as well. I am working to get the RPG calendar rebooted by next month, because next month is our 10th anniversary of being a website. And I'm trying to get a streaming schedule going. And what else am I doing? I think that's it. Oh, maybe the Instagram, as always. But we'll see if any of those things happen. We'll see if some of those things happen. We'll see what of those things happening. We'll see what of those things happen. And if any of them happen, I hope you enjoy them. If not, I hope you come back in a couple of days to listen to episode 2 of the Puppy War. I will talk to you then. Bye, guys. We are.